In just a couple of minutes on this evening edition of Ozarks at Large, Frank Tavares, who has been the voice of NPR's underwriting announcements for more than the last 20 years, in conversation. That's just ahead. It's Halloween.
It is Halloween. Trick or treat.
That's right. You know what? I did not get to trick or treat as a child.
You didn't.
I grew up in a very small town in rural Arkansas. And when we moved there, we were about the only house on this dirt road. So there was a school carnival, but I never got the experience of going door to door and tricking or treating.
That's unfortunate. I actually live too far out of the city. Fayetteville has since grown, but I live too far out that we had to come into town and, you know, trick or treat in my cousin's neighborhood or a friend's neighborhood.
So we both kind of know what it's like not to have something that other people experience.
Right.
Public radio, KUAF, is always here for you. You don't have to go into town.
You don't.
You can, if you are the only house on a dirt road, you can still get us.
Right, because of our fabulous 1,000-watt.
Right.
100,000-watt.
That's right. That's right. So we hope that we give you treats throughout the broadcast day. And there's no trick involved.
There is no trick involved. We do ask, however, for your support. That I guess that is the trick, the catch. I don't know if it's a catch, really, but we do ask for your support. We are in the final hours of our fall on-air fundraiser. At the end of Halloween, midnight tonight, midnight October 31st, the fundraiser is over. So you have a few hours left to contribute to KUAF. You can go to our website, supportkuaf.com.
That's right. The phone volunteers are gone. They're presumably out getting some candy corn door to door right now.
I hope so.
I hope so, too. And if you have a moment right now and you're near a computer, you can support us at supportkuaf.com. The contribution that you make is put with contributions from thousands of other listeners that keeps programs like Performance Today and Morning Edition and Fresh Air and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on the air. We pay for them with your contributions.
And you know what? If you do go to supportkuaf.com, I'd like to know what you're dressed up as. If you're in a costume or if your kids are in a costume.
Yeah.
While you're making your contribution, just kind of, you know, let us know.
So we can live vicariously through you as you trick-or-treat tonight.
Right. Because we're not trick-or-treating.
That's right. Supportkuaf.com, and thank you. This is Ozarks at Large. You may not know the name Frank Tavares, but you'll recognize his voice.
This is NPR.
For decades, he's been the voice of NPR's underwriting announcements. He's leaving that job next year, but don't worry, he won't be bored. He's a professor of communications at Southern Connecticut University. He's finishing his first novel, and he's still talking about his first collection of short stories, just published, and titled The Man Who Built Boxes. I recently reached Frank at his home, and I asked him about his passion for writing.
I'm an early morning guy. My wife is, too, but sometimes I'm a little earlier than she. And that's the time when I would be alone. So I could get up early, fix myself a cup of tea, a piece of toast, and then sit down in front of the laptop. And if I had some mornings, I might have as much as an hour. Other mornings, maybe 30 minutes, even less. But the idea was to do it. It was as simple as that. I don't manage every single day, but more often than not. And so that's worked for years. But you know something, Kyle? Your work habits change. I think back when I was in grad school, my most productive period didn't start till about 10 at night. I couldn't do that now. So you have to pay attention to when is it going to work best for you? When's your most productive time?
The characters in many of the short stories in The Man Who Built Boxes seem to be people, and this is a compliment, seem to be people we know. It's just that we don't know as much about them as we do after we've read your pages. Does that make sense?
Well, this is thank you for saying that, because that's one of the things that I hope for here. I want to attract readers who are curious about others. I guess it's as simple as that. And so maybe they might see something that resonates with them, a little flash of their own personality or people that they know. And hearing you ask that question, it's like, well, okay, it worked with one person. Maybe it'll work with somebody else. But that's really something that I'm concerned about. I want people to be able to recognize them and to want to know a little bit more about them, just as I'm hoping that the same thing will happen with the characters. Some of these characters are more curious about where they are in their life at a particular time, and some of the other characters, yeah, they don't care. This is what I'm dealing with now, and okay, what's next? So, yes, thank you for asking that.
Where do the ideas come from? Because each of these stories is different.
It's yes, that's something that I often wonder about myself. And sometimes it'll come from a snatch of conversation that I hear. And I'll be on the train, and I'll hear just a piece of conversation, people walking past me, and I'll make a little note of that sentence. Or sometimes I carry a little portable audio recorder, or I can use my smartphone, and I'll very surreptitiously repeat what I've just heard. Or other times, I've had a couple of the stories in the book started with the title first. And I found the title was very interesting, and I wanted to know a little bit more about it. One of the stories, there's one story called Accident with a View, for instance, and the first paragraph or so of that story is something that actually I experienced up to a point. The ending of that paragraph, or those first couple of paragraphs, is a little different. I was sitting at an intersection in my car. I drive an SUV, so I'm up a little bit. And the car in front of me at the light, waiting for it to turn green, is a regular sedan, so it's a little lower. And to our left, there's this truck. And I know the truck is blocking the sight lines of the person in the sedan in front of me. And I see out of the corner of my eye, and I turn and I look, and here's some fellow in a hurry, does something really dumb. Just as the light is changing to green, he dashes across the street to make it before the traffic starts. And I see what's going to happen. I see that the driver in front of me can't see him because of the truck, but their timing is going to be just right on the mark, and just as he gets in front of the car is going to take off. And I had this visceral reaction to it. I my first instinct was to lean on the horn, and then I thought, no, bad idea, because that'll just make this guy pull out a little quicker. And I actually yelled into the windshield, no. Now, it ended okay. The guy saw the car starting to pull out. He stopped. Everybody looked at him like he was an idiot, which he was. And it went on, and life was the same. So I said to myself as I'm driving away, literally shaking from watching this, well, I know how this story started. What if it just ended a little differently? Well, let's go find out. And so that's how that particular story began. And other times, like I say, it's a little snatch of dialogue or something else that I've observed. The story that takes place, Antonio's Yard, that starts in this little village in Italy. Last summer, I had a chance to travel to this one city in Italy. It's called a dying city. I can't remember the Italian name for it. And it's built on this plateau, which is made of not very stable volcanic rock. The city's medieval, so it's hundreds of years old. And literally parts of this plateau have been crumbling away. And so you're walking through the little streets of this town, and here's this beautiful facade of some 300-year-old building, and then you realize there's nothing on the other side of it. There's just this drop. So I thought of this fellow who lives there, and he wakes up one morning, and part of his backyard is going. And it's not a new thing. And so that's how that story started. So sometimes I'll write that beginning scene. I don't know where it's going. I'll put it aside, and later I'll come back to it.
You mentioned that sometimes the title comes first. I'm going to take a shot at one that maybe had the title before the rest. And it's the first one in the book, My First Ex-Wife's Third Wedding.
Very nicely done.
Yeah.
You're almost correct. The title came almost instantly after I heard that line. And the first line of that story, let me see if I can find it. The first line of the story is, you know, my first ex-wife said, it never occurred to me that I'd be married three times. And I had heard that line spoken, and I'm thinking, that's really interesting. And then the title came very, very quickly after that. And I just said, I love this title. I really like this title, My First Ex-Wife's Third Wedding. I mean, I'm not sure what it means, but it has a nice feel to it. And so you're almost right. You're 75% of the way there.
When you hear someone say something like that,
yes,
do you allow yourself to actually make a physical note, or do you just have to store it away and hope you remember it?
If I can, I will make a physical note because, you know, good ideas, what's the old expression? Good ideas like pencils get lost. And sometimes I'll mentally store it away, and the first moment I can, I'll just reach for a piece of paper and write it down. Because many times I, at the end of the day or midway through the day, I said, oh, what was that I heard Kyle say this morning? Oh, we were talking on the phone, and I really loved that. Oh, I wish I had written it down. And maybe it'll come back later, and maybe it won't. But I got to tell you, you know, after you hit 30, sometimes it doesn't come back.
The name of the book is The Man Who Built Boxes and Other Stories. Frank, can I ask you just three quick, perhaps silly questions?
Well, you know, being a college professor, you know what I'm going to say. There are no silly questions.
Well, let's see.
And so when people log on to Amazon.com and look for The Man Who Built Boxes, and I want them to remember that there are no silly questions when you look at the author bio or the description of the book. If there are questions, they're legitimate questions, and I am willing to answer them.
Okay.
How'd I do? Was that okay? Was that convincing?
Yes, it was.
Well, I meant it.
Well, here is silly question number one.
Yeah.
Have you ever gone up to a counter and asked someone if they sold forever stamps?
You caught me in the middle of drinking water. That was very dangerous. But no, and I'm going to now.
I don't. You got to be careful because that could really mess with somebody, though.
Oh, yes. But I've had people who know me, some of my colleagues at the university, will come by me. I've had this happen to me, I think, on three different occasions. Now, you know they're NPR listeners because somebody will come up to me. I had somebody do this in a meeting with our new dean, as a matter of fact. We're all there, and the meeting hasn't started. And somebody just leaned over to me, behind me, so I didn't see who it was. And they did the line. Mentioned one of the pharmacies sells forever stamps at the checkout counter. And I'm thinking, they're listening.
All right.
Nicely done, Kyle.
Thank you. Silly question number two.
Yeah.
Have people recognized you because of the Capital Cities song that might not have heard you on NPR?
Not yet, but I'm waiting for it. And now we're going to have to tell people. Now we're going to have to tell people about the Capital Cities song.
How did that come about?
The fellows in the group, Capital Cities is a Los Angeles music group, and I got an email from one of them back in the very early spring, or it might have been from their agent, who said basically that they're working on this particular piece and they're trying this little funny idea, and they wonder if I might be open to voicing a couple of pieces of it for them. Well, you're always suspicious when somebody approaches you because, I mean, if somebody tracks me down and asks me if I'd be willing to work on something, I'm very careful about it. There's nothing in my contract with NPR about the work I do with NPR, for instance, that prohibits me from doing other voice work. But because I've been involved with NPR, both part-time and full-time, I was a department head there for a decade, executive producer. I was host of several non-news shows during my tenure there. I'm one of these real passionate public radio fans, and I'm going to be very careful about doing anything that might reflect negatively on my association with NPR and on public radio. So, you know, I'm very leery at first, and they said, well, let us send you a clip of this, and then they voiced some of it. One of the guys in the band voiced what they wanted me to do using different words, and then they pulled a clip of me doing a funding credit someplace and put it in so I could hear how it went against the music. And so long story short, I thought, you know, this is going to be fun. And it reminded me, do you remember the Meatloaf song from years ago, Paradise by the Dashboard Light?
With Phil Rizzuto doing the play-by-play.
With Phil Rizzuto doing that little cameo where he does the play-by-play as we as the characters in the song are basically making out in the front seat of this car. And it put me in mind of that. Well, here's this, one of the artists on this particular CD clip. Did you ever think, Kyle, that you might hear in the same sentence the names NPR's Frank Tavares and hip-hop artist Andre 3000 together? I mean, that's just...
Support for Capital Cities comes from Lazy Hooks. Public Radio.
Silly question number three. Have you ever visited the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation?
I really enjoy your silly questions, Kyle. This is really cool. No, I haven't, but I remember when we used to have quite a few credits from Ted and Jennifer Stanley years ago, and then Jennifer Stanley was on the board of directors for NPR for a while, and I was still there when she was on the board. We overlapped, I think, from my full-time association with them, and I did have a chance to meet her a few times, and I remember telling her that aside from her, I was the one that said her name out loud more than anybody else.
Well, Frank, thanks so much. The name of the book of the short stories, The Man Who Built Boxes and Other Stories, it's out now. You can find it online as well as in bookstores. And then the novel that you're working on, which excerpt, Digging Up Mr. Bradley, any idea when that might come out?
I'm hoping it'll be sometime within a year. I'm hoping that that also will be available at Amazon.com. So pretty soon when you put my name in at Amazon, aside from some of the NPR things that come up and The Man That Built Boxes, there'll be the novel there too. Kyle, it's been a pleasure to be with you, and thank you for letting me share some of your time with your listeners. That's an honor.
We'll chat again when the novel comes out. How's that?
Excellent.
Frank Tavares has been the voice of NPR's underwriting announcements for the past two decades, and his new collection of short stories is titled The Man Who Built Boxes. You can find it at Amazon.com and other sites. I talked to him from his home in Connecticut. This is Ozarks at Large.